The views expressed on the following program are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of WMEL staff, management, or advertisers.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Not just marketing. Yeah, this is Donna Anselmo. Welcome to Bold Talk Business Radio, the place you are on the dial. That's at AM 1060 WMEL today. And we are doing our special talk today, which is Space Talk, at the top of the hour. And in the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking about leadership. We're glad you're with us today because I want you to think about something. Who is out there helping you hold the vision for what you want to accomplish in your life and in your work? And we're going to be taking up that topic about engaging in your leadership vision in the next half hour. But before we do, we've got some cool stuff to talk about with Jason Ryan, founder of SpaceFlightInsider.com, an online journal. Jason's with us on the line. Pete Anselmo's here in the studio. And Pete and I have been watching for that special launch that SpaceX is really trying hard to get up in the air. And we've been out and about this past week hoping to see what's going to happen with the space program now. Pete Anselmo, take it away.
Yes, I'd like to get shout out actually to all the people who cover the space launch and the repeat business that they've been doing. I would particularly like to give accolades to the WMEL launch coverage team, John Harper and John Moore, so that these people have been covering it from stem to stern. And we'll be on again this evening. We'll be on at 6:05. The launch window opens at 6:35, and so hopefully we'll get the launch off the ground tonight. And I'd just like to remind people that, especially our listeners and even tourists and what have you, that this is an ideal time for businesses to bring their brand to the view of the customers who are out there. This launch coverage that we have, these customers, these people are a captive audience. They line the beaches. They're out there listening. And this is an ideal time for your brand to get in front of these people through our programs here at WMEL. So if you're interested, you can call us at 631-495-8646. That's Pete Anselmo at Bold Marketing Solutions, and we will help you get on the air. And the nice part about advertising on radio is that we can do it rapidly. We can get you on the air. We can write and record a small, let's say a 30-second or a 1-minute spot, and we can do it within 2 days. So it's a quick turnaround.
And again, that phone number was 631-495-8646. If you have questions about radio advertising and you'd like to find out how to make that work for your business, right now we have Jason Ryan on the line waiting to tell us about what's happening in the world of space. And make sure that you do go out. I want to make sure to signal you to check out this website, spaceflightinsider.com, where you can see Jason's fine writing because he's senior editor of that vehicle. Jason Ryan.
Hey, Donna. Well, I want to remind your viewers that Space Flight Insider is your one-stop shop for all things space. And while we do produce some really great written content, we also have still photography, videography from the various spots around the Cape and at the pad itself during launch time. Now, a little bit more on that later on, given all the things that have gone on with this launch. But we also, and they should check out Space Flight Insider, I think, a bit for tonight, to have a live webcast. Now, no other space news website actually does a live webcast. Now, let's say, oh, we got live coverage. And what that actually means is they're going to share the feed from NASA or ULA or SpaceX. No, no, no. We actually have me out there at the cusp, about a mile and a half away from the pad, and I'm reporting live. Now, we're the only outlet that really does that isn't like Channel 9 or Channel 13, and I can't do a good a job as Greg Plone or the others. But I try my best. So, yeah, thanks for that, Donna, and I hope your folks tune in tonight to find out a little bit more about tonight's launch.
Well, what's the inside scoop, Jason? Do you think it's going to get off tonight?
I've learned with any launch, Pete, that you don't make predictions. You just don't know. You never know what's going to happen. I mean,
yeah.
There's been a ton of launches that have been delayed, like because of boats. There's been a ton of launches that have been delayed for stuff that's totally out of the mission management team's control. So I don't know, but I got my fingers crossed. As I was telling you about, even before I came on the show, it's quite a haul for me to go over there. It's definitely worth my time. But it is quite the adventure to go over there and get everything set up. So, I'm hoping.
Now, that was an unusual hold there because of a boat coming into the launch area.
Not so much, Pete. Not so fast there. No, actually, there have been a ton of launches that have been delayed because of boats. The Orb 3 accident up in Wallops, you know, you guys remember that, where it was a year or so ago when it exploded. That was actually delayed a day because of a boat. There's been a lot of shuttle missions that have been delayed because of boats. An Atlas V or two that I've covered have been delayed because... And a lot of people have this vision of, like, some guy in a sailboat. He wants the cool picture of the rocket from the pad, and that's really not the case. The fact of the matter is, this is a very honest and innocent mistake to make, because the box, as the 920th Rescue Wing has to patrol, mm-hmm. is fairly large. If you can imagine, if you're out there in a boat, you don't have a big red line on the water that lets you know don't go into this area. And plus, the area is huge, and what they're trying to do is say, okay, look, this rocket, if it goes wrong, it could land on you out in this water. So they have this big window, this big footprint that they've cordoned off, the box, they call it.
Right.
And so it actually happens more often than you think, because it is a large area. Now, in SpaceX's case, it's actually two areas. There's an area that's at the launch site, and there's an area at the, of course, I still love you, autonomous spaceport drone ship landing site, where they're going to try to land this thing out on a barge. So... they've got double jeopardy there. They actually have two spots that they have to kind of look out for.
So what's the plan for this upcoming launch?
Well, this mission is going to be for the SES-9 telecommunications satellite. SES is a Luxembourg-based company. And essentially, it's going to be in the Asia-Pacific region. It's going to hold the same orbital spot, 108.2 degrees east, as the SES-7 spacecraft. And you're probably thinking, well, why are you having two spacecraft in the same area? Well, that market really is going kind of huge, and they need the extra oomph that this satellite will provide. And, by the way, this is the largest satellite that will be in that area. So they're looking to add some extra heft to their capability. So the primary mission for SES-9 is, of course, to launch that satellite to the correct orbit.
Well, Jason, are you still with us there?
Yes, I'm still with you all. How are you? Are you reading me?
Yes, we are now. Good. So SpaceX is targeting another evening launch of the SES-9.
Yes, if everything goes well, they have about an hour and a half. Window will open at 6:35 p.m. and extend about, I think, 8:05, memory serves.
You know, we really enjoy doing this segment. And Jason Ryan, you are on with us almost every month. We do have some other people come in and talk space with us. We had Frank DiBello from Space Florida last month, or was it the month? I guess it was last month. And we're grateful that you're here with us. One of the things that I think is so interesting is that while SpaceX is launching a rocket with a satellite into space, hopefully tonight, their mission is actually to bring about changes in space technology that are actually going to get people to be able to live on other planets. What do you think of that, Jason Ryan?
Well, I'm not sure that that's their actual mission. They're a launch service provider. Their job is to launch your customer's payloads to orbit, be that the DOD, NASA, or in this case, a commercial customer. I think what SpaceX is doing, and a lot of people are starting to give them grief for the fact that this is the fourth attempt tonight. I don't think that's fair, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, what they're doing is what no other LSP, as we call launch service providers, are willing to do, or seem willing to do at this time. Let me say that. And that is, they're trying out these new technologies while they're conducting actual missions.
Exactly.
I think that is astonishing when you think about it. The biggest one that really kind of caught my attention is, okay, they got this, and it was December when they launched the Orbcomm OG-2 mission. And if you look at that, that was the return to flight for their Falcon 9 booster, which incurred the last flight was the Sierra-7 mission before that one, and it ended in disaster because the rocket blew up 9 seconds in. Now, here it is. They're going to return to flight. They think they fixed the problem. And most companies will play it ultra safe, make it a nice, simple mission, and launch and get that payload up there and call it a day. SpaceX didn't do that. They did all of that. Plus, they said, you know what? We're going to land the first stage back on the ground at Landing Zone 1 at Cape Canaveral. That's unheard of. And if you look at the time that they took to go from the accident to the return to flight, it was just 6 months. 6 months. That is really a rapid turnaround. I think SpaceX is looking to become a launch service provider of choice, but also they're looking to say, look, these other companies, they may not be as innovative as we're trying to be. We're going to do new things and, you know, try new technologies, and we're going to do it for a lot less than what others are charging. And that's a lot of what you're seeing is in terms of what they're providing.
That's interesting that you bring up the pricing, that they're going to be a lot less. I was perusing their website today, and I noticed that they actually have pricing on there for the Falcon 9 is something like $60 million, and the Falcon Heavy is something like $90 million. So people start saving your shekels if you want to get into space. It's going to cost some money.
Well, I think that you think $60 million sounds like a lot, but let me just say that that's about half of what some of their nearest competitors can provide. These guys have basically walked into the space arena business room, and there's the people that were there before. They picked up the end of the table and they flipped it over on the end, and they've left. And now they force everyone in that room to kind of race and catch up with what they're doing. I'm going to own my own part of that. When I said that, you know, I saw their first video of them landing the first stage back on the ground, I laughed. And you know what? As of December, I'm not laughing anymore. You got to hold people accountable when they make wild claims, and that's kind of what the job of journalists are. So initially, that's what I did. But they're not wild claims anymore. They're a historical fact. They've done it.
Yep.
So, you know, at the end, you got to look at what they've accomplished as opposed to what has been done for the previous, 50, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's astonishing. They've really changed the game.
I know when Frank DiBello was here from Space Florida, he was very enthusiastic about the change in the pricing structure for companies that want to launch satellites and transponders into Earth orbit, that it's the pricing has come way, way down. And I guess, obviously, SpaceX sees that model and is going to hit the numbers.
SpaceX gained worldwide attention for several historic milestones, including being the only private company ever to return a spacecraft from low Earth orbit, and that was in December 2010. And the company made history again in 2012 in May when its Dragon spacecraft attached to the International Space Station, exchanged cargo payloads, and then returned safely to Earth. Jason, what can you tell us? Is there any news on what's happening with the Dragon?
Well, Dragon, I think all the real news is on the commercial crew side. Cargo, they've already been there, done that. Now, they got another mission where they're going to return it to flight after the CR-7 accident, and I think that should be in the next couple months or so. You have to forgive me. I don't have the launch manifest burned in my head. But I think the exciting stuff that we're seeing is coming out of the crew side, and that's the crew-rated Dragon. You're going to see there's going to be an in-flight abort that's I want to say the final quarter of this year, and that's going to be really cool because we saw the pad abort. You know, we were there for that. We covered that, and basically there's a little rocket on the pad, our little the spacecraft on the pad, and it goes up really fast. The parachutes deploy, and, you know, it landed out in the Atlantic, and it used a Super Draco thrusters to do that. Well, that's cool, but what's going to happen at the end of this year is you're going to see a regular Falcon 9 launch, and then sometime during the launch, They're gonna, something has quote unquote gone wrong. And they're gonna press that button and they're gonna see what happens hopefully everything will work out just fine, and the Dragon spacecraft will be pulled away from the Falcon 9, and it will do the same kind of abort thing, and it will land out in the ocean. Now, what that's being done to simulate is if something goes, as we say in the industry, off nominal during flight, the crew can push that button, they can pull away from the rocket, and they can land safely either out in the Atlantic or the Pacific. And I think that's going to be pretty exciting when that takes place. And one of the things I will say is Dragon really has made the Kennedy Space Center, they provided some of the more unique experiences that the media has had the opportunity to cover in the past, I'd say, year and a half or so.
Very good. Now, for the listeners out there and for the tourists, I think they should bear in mind that March has flights coming up, so that after this launch tonight, there'll be launches March 22nd, hopefully. Orbital ATK is going to launch the Cygnus spacecraft. And then March 29th, SpaceX again, the CRS-8. So these are things that will be occurring on the Space Coast, and the tourists should plan their schedule because things will be happening.
Now, Pete, let me interject something really quick there. One of the things that Space Flight Insider does is we listen to our people, our company name, and I always love it when we're made fun of because, oh, well, you're an insider, but you weren't in for this special event. No, you misunderstand. And what I tell folks is this. It's like the company's name, Insider, is for our viewers. We try to bring you inside. That's what our name means, and that's what we're trying to do. But when it comes to, like, There's a lot of different audiences when it comes to space. There's the geeks like myself, and then there's the regular public, the tourists who may be coming down. Well, I encourage everyone to go to our website, spaceflightinsider.com. Look in the right hand corner, and you'll see our upper right hand corner, and you'll see our launch calendar. If you click on that, we actually have two different ways to view that. We can either show you that the geek side, which is the list view of all the launches, or maybe you're planning on coming in July and August and you want to know what launches are going to be there. If you click on calendar view, that will change, and you can actually see laid out reports with all the dates in a calendar-type format. So that's one of the things I want to encourage your readers to go check out.
One of the other things, Jason, that I'd like our readers to know, too, because I'm in the business marketing world, and I think it's important for people to know that you have a tremendous viewership with many, many, thousands and thousands of visitors to your site every month. So for companies that are interested in getting in front of a space audience, you do offer advertising and sponsor packages. And I'd like our listeners to know that so they can go to spaceflightinsider.com and connect with you. And you can also connect with us at AM 1060 WMEL, where we are reaching and blanketing an area of over 4 million people. So contact us, call Pete at 631-495-8646, and he can put you in touch with information about WMEL advertising or Spaceflight Insider advertising.
I'd also like
to
remind or just give a shout out to we had the pleasure of going this past Wednesday to
February 24th, which was my birthday.
That's right.
And SpaceX had planned to launch a real big candle in honor of my birthday.
Exactly.
Didn't quite happen.
Space Florida and the Tourism, Space Coast Office of Tourism sponsored a party at the Exploration Tower, and we were invited, and it was a lovely evening. In fact, it was jam-packed. I mean, they in fact, they eventually had to close the doors and would not allow any more people in, so it was an attraction.
The Exploration Tower there was at capacity with people wanting to see the launch, and it was pretty exciting. But while we were there, we met a fellow named Tom Brown, and I wanted to give him a shout-out. And the reason we're giving Tom Brown a shout-out today is that I told him we would be doing that, and the reason is that he loves talk radio, and he also loves space. So, Tom Brown, if you're out there, I hope you're out there listening today, because we're making good on our promise. And howdy, partner.
Well, it's a spot that Exploration Tower is at Port Canaveral, and if you're in the area, it's a great place to view a launch from. In addition to obviously the highways along the beach, and out in Titusville has many, many good spots. And Jerry Park. Is it Jerry Park? Yeah, that's another good spot.
Jetty Park.
I'm thinking of Long Island Park. Jetty Park is an excellent spot to watch the launches also.
And Jason is out there before every launch, coming across the state to make sure you're here, whether or not the launch actually goes off. And you can be found usually on the causeway.
IGL Causeway, that's usually where the media, we meet up at the 45th Space Wing, and they take us out onto Cape Canaveral. We're about usually between a mile, 1.7 miles and 2 miles away from any of the three primary launch sites.
Jason, we have about 3 minutes to go here on this segment of Space Talk on Bold Talk Business Radio. Talk to us a little bit about what you think is the most exciting thing that you're seeing going on in the space world right now.
Oh, right now? Wow, where do you begin? I mean, I think probably, without a doubt, in terms of the public imagination and what's really, you know, it's funny you should mention that. We actually posted an article, and I spoke with a lot of experts within the field. You know, we had Phil Plait from Bad Astronomy, several astronauts, Astronaut Abby, and a few others, and they all kind of weighed in on it, and I kind of got to agree with them. I think commercial crew and cargo is the one that has got everyone's attention for the present. At right now, between now and 2017, those are really the most exciting things. I think in 2018 on, it's going to be SLS and Orion, because or it's maybe a mixture of the two. But for right now, it's the commercial efforts.
Now, I understand. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I understand you interviewed Jules Schneider from the Orion Project just last week. Is that right?
Well, it was earlier this month. We had a very special interview with him in the ONC building before Orion arrived. It actually flew in via the Super Guppy later that afternoon. But he was very, very – Lockheed Martin was absolutely fabulous. They cleared the ONC building at Kennedy Space Center. I mean, there were some workers in there. And we sat down right where Orion was going to go, and you have all this great hardware all around us, and we interviewed him. But yes, we did. We had a great opportunity to speak with Jules, and he and the team over at Lockheed Martin were just fabulous.
Very good. Yeah, we had him on, and he's excellent. And that's an exciting project, obviously. It's going to take some duration, some time, but nonetheless, following the different steps is extremely interesting. And I think also the Dragon Heavy is going to be another interesting project to follow.
Right.
Falcon Heavy,
yeah.
We're looking forward to that.
Right now I have up on my computer screen, spaceflightinsider.com, where I'm watching the launch clock tick down 5 hours, 6 minutes, 4 seconds to today's launch. And I want to encourage our listeners to check out Space Flight Insider, because you can watch in real time what's happening. Jason Ryan, thanks for being with us again on Bold Talk Business Radio to talk space today. I know you'll be back with us another day, and we can talk about what actually happened today out in the field while you were watching. Hopefully there'll be something big happening. And after the news break, we're going to be back talking about leadership and business, and I'm going to tell you more about that in the next half. Think about who's helping you hold your vision for your business. Think about the fact that innovation is so important in what we do, and so you have to think about how you're going to make the changes you need to make to get to the goals you want to reach, and we're going to be talking about that in a little while. This is Donna Anselmo and Pete Anselmo thanking Jason Ryan for being with us at Bold Talk Business Radio this afternoon.
This is Bold Talk Business Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, the CEO of Bold Marketing Solutions, Donna Anselmo.
Donna Anselmo, thank you for being with us at AM 1060 WMEL. Did you know you can listen to us online as well at 1060WMEL.com, where we stream worldwide? And in our last segment, we talked Space Talk with Jason Ryan, senior editor of Space Flight Insider magazine. And today, we have for you this afternoon in the second segment of our show, Mr. Evan Haskell. I'm sorry, Hackle. And I have to say, Evan is one of the most flexible people I've ever met, because I mixed up our interview time, and he was able to make it under the wire to get with us today at the time we had available on the air today. So, Evan Hackle, thank you so much for being with us today.
It is my pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
Terrific. I want to ask our listeners to think about, if you wish that you could do better at whatever it is that you do, if you wanted to build stronger relationships with your work team so that you believe that everybody's working in the same direction toward the same goals, building tighter knit groups so that people feel empowered to do what needs to be done and they're more productive and successful every day. Well, that's the type of thing and work that Evan Hackle is involved with every day, and he's the author of a new book called Engaging Leadership. So, Evan, tell us a little bit about engaging leadership. How can people implement engaging techniques, and what exactly is engaging leadership?
Excellent questions, and let me start with the word engaging. I'm spelling with an I for involvement. And the distinction that I'm trying to make is, a lot of people have people that are engaged. They tell them what to do at work. They, you know, that they're clearly monitoring them, that people know what's going on in the business. But my spelling of the word engage has to do with involvement. And my theory is, and it's not really, I use the word theory, but what has proven to be very successful in my career and helped me build a company that went from my being the fifth employee in 1988 to being a $10 billion company when I left in 2008, is really this concept of involving people in the thought process around the business so that everyone shares the vision, everyone has contributed to the vision, so that people feel like they're part of the company, part of the decision making, and that there's a sense of team, a sense of loyalty, and a shared vision where everyone is working for the same goals. And when you do that, you empower people in very, very productive ways.
I'm going to ask you to make probably a very subtle distinction here between what is meant by engagement with an E versus involvement in engagement, which I know is involvement. But how does involvement actually differ from engagement? In your mind?
So let me give you an example. There are a lot of different methods of leadership, and you know, the worst I would call, you know, mushroom management, where, you know, you just leave everyone in the dark and just expect them to do what they're supposed to do. And then there's a higher level of leadership, which I would call engaging with an E. And that's when management takes the time and reviews the plans of the company and shares with people, look at, these are our goals, and this is our vision, and this is our mission, and this is where we're going. So people are engaged. They know what's happening. They feel a part of the organization. The highest level, though, is engagement with an I. And that is where management, as part of the decision making and as part of the workflow, regularly gets all the stakeholders, meaning all the employees in the company, sometimes customers, sometimes suppliers, involved in asking their opinions and helping them as an organization build those plans. So when the plans are shared, the people feel like, you know what, I had a part in that, and that my opinion was valued. And this can be done in very different ways, and certainly in larger companies, it's more difficult. It's also more important, but it's certainly not hard in large companies to do that.
What I really like about what you're talking about is the fact that it seems to me that it's more empowering. Employees feel more empowering and more empowered and then engaged when they feel like they're actually able to influence a process. One of the things that I've taught in some of the coaching sessions that I do is that people need to focus on the part of life and business that they have the ability to either influence or control and let go of the rest of it. And so often, I think people get disengaged because they feel a lack of empowerment and a lack of control in the workplace.
Yeah, they sit back and they say, I just do a job. And And you know, part of what I do, first of all, I ran very large, very successful business. But now having worked as a consultant, I interview people. And I mean, just yesterday, I interviewed three different people that worked for the same company, which I will leave nameless. And, you know, all of them said essentially the same thing. Our biggest issue here is communication. No one asks us our opinion. You know, like, well, I'm asking. And, you know, here they're sharing ideas that are, like, so literally simple with such big impact that that could have on the company. But there's no one in the company listening because everything's being pushed down. And that culture is not, it's not to say you can't run an effective business that way. There are plenty of them. You just can't run a business that's going to grow at a very fast rate, retain the best people, when you do not really involve people and engage them with an eye in the whole process of the business.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the actual techniques and strategies that you recommend for companies in order to be able to get their people more involved in what where the company is going and why you believe that's going to make such a big change.
Okay, so I think perhaps if I shared an example, that might be a powerful way to do this so it could be seen more real world. And the example I'm about to share is really where this impetus of this concept really came together. In the year 2000, there was a franchise organization called Flooring America. They went bankrupt. They had 400 company-owned stores, all ran going out of business sales. There were 202 franchisees with approximately 300 locations, many of them near these bankrupt locations. And the staff of the company was incredibly disillusioned. They didn't, you know if the company was going to be around, if the franchisees were all going to leave. And we went in as the buyer of the company, and we realized that if we were going to create a solution that was going to be successful, that we had to get the buy-in of everyone. So we went around the country and with all of the franchisees, and we did town hall meetings, and we sat there and said, here are some of the big issues, and we want to hear your opinion. We went to the employees, and we would do meetings with the employees and workshops with the employees, talking through some of these bigger issues. And in addition to that, managers would have one-on-ones asking people what they thought the vision of the company should be, and what are the things that are really, really important for people to do. We then created advisory councils with the franchisees and the staff the staff of the company together. We did surveys of the employees of the franchisees. So not just the owner of the franchisees, but the employees could have an opportunity to contribute ideas and thoughts. And so having taken all this information, we brought the franchisees and senior management in, and then we worked on a workshop to build a plan. And then we took that plan, and instead of saying everyone, hey, this is the plan, we said, here's our first draft of the plan. We went back to the employees of the company, and we said to the employees of the company, how can we make this better? We went back to the franchisees and said, you know, how can we make this better so that people had incredible opportunity for input? Then we finalized the plan, and people felt a part of it. And to give you an idea, the revenue of the company in 2000 was $700 million, and we had 202 franchisees, and we did 202 franchisees, 300 locations. In 4 years, we were doing $2 billion, and we had 500 locations.
That's obviously very impressive, and we're going to continue this discussion. This is Donna Anselmo on Bold Talk Business Radio at AM 1060 WMEL. Pete Anselmo's in the studio with us, and he was engaged in our last conversation on space talk, but I know he's probably got some thoughts on leadership that he'd like to share in this segment as well. I want to ask our guest, Evan Hackel, a question about how you keep people and companies, particularly top leadership, from falling back into old patterns. I've worked in corporate in a number of environments, in healthcare and staffing and technology, and very often there are, you know, it's like the new project on the block and everybody gets all jazzed up about it and motivation is high when the consultants are there, and then the consultants leave and people fall back into old patterns, and then it's the, you know, next year there's another push for something. How do you keep people engaged in the vision that is shared and developed when you're working with them?
Well, the key is that you develop policies and procedures that ensure that that engagement continues. And I just want to make a side note. One of the big rages during the economic downturn was like to give everyone two jobs. So everyone was like crazy, crazy busy. And to me, that's perhaps one of the singularly worst things you can do, because when people do their job well, their output is significantly better than when they do their job poorly. So in the case of myself in the real world environment, everyone in senior management was required to go out and visit 15 or 20 locations a year. We continue to do every year town hall meetings. We would do employee offsites with the employees, where we literally put the employees in the room with flip charts, and we would say to people, anybody pick any topic you want, and people, you can either go to a topic with a flip chart and contribute. This concept's called, by the way, an open meeting, or you can start your own, and for 3 or 4 hours, they all sit back and brainstorm ways to make the company better. And then they all make presentations back. And the point here is you do this every year, and you don't just sit back and say, oh, well, every three or four years, we're going to do this. It becomes literally part of the culture. The other part of the culture is, you know, simply having lunch with people and taking people to lunch that are not your direct report, so that you get to know people. We call them echo groups, where everyone collaborates, helps everyone, and where people that were doing similar things for different companies would get together on a monthly basis just to meet and talk and share ideas of what they were doing. We rewarded people in the company for sharing ideas, for collaborating with ideas. We acknowledge the savings and what they were doing and how they were helping people. And I will say this, the most important thing in engaging leadership is for management and to sincerely and honestly believe it, not to patronize it. And that's what makes the difference. When one embraces and recognizes that when you get help from others, that you actually build something that's better and more effective, that's when you get real results.
Evan, this is Pete Anselmo. Very interesting ideas here. I'm curious if in your experience, do you separate out at all? In other words, do you, let's say, deal with salespeople differently, or do you engage them differently than, let's say, production people? Are there differences within the organization where that you would treat them slightly differently, or is this a generalized approach?
Well, a lot of what you're asking has to do with the size of the organization. The smaller the organization, the more you're going to treat the organization as a singular entity, and you're going to have less silos. In larger organizations, where literally you can have 500 or 600 salespeople, in some organizations many more than that, it's very difficult to, quote, create collaboration where you have everyone together all at one time. But at the same token, what you want to do is you want to still bring together people from diverse aspects of the company to talk about some of the bigger issues. So you might have a part of the process where you're reaching out and you're talking to all the people in the sales area versus we'll call it the production area, the people producing the work. But then at the same token, and you would rotate, you would look for people that are particularly inspired and bring them together to talk about the issues, because there tends to be in organizations differences of opinion between the people selling and the people performing,
right,
that you need to work out. So you don't want to have barriers, but the bigger you are, the harder it is to have everyone obviously at one time.
Right. I think in general, the salespeople have a their experience is that they like to get in, they make the sale, they close the sale, and then they just want to hand it off rather than be engaged, as you say, so that they carry through on the customer service. It's not just make the sale and leave, but that you have to have that an integrated solution to a sales problem.
Let's talk a little bit, Evan Hackel, about the key attributes that leaders need to have in order to make a process like this effective in their company.
It's an excellent question. So let's start with what I think is the biggest one, and that is not to have the belief that you're always right, and that when you enter into conversations with other people, instead of the natural tendency that most people have to look for why they're wrong, is to look why they may be right. What is the kernel of truth? What is the idea this person's sharing with me that could make the company better, could make my idea better, or is in fact better than my idea? And that is a very big and important distinction. I talk a lot about it in my book and in the process of how you go about doing it. But having that openness to the fact that there may be, in fact, better ideas by others, and to truly and honestly value the opinion of everyone that works in the company, including the people that are the janitors in the building. And maybe call it humbleness, is certainly a big attribute. The other attribute is to value each person in the organization as a true member of the team, and that and understand the importance of really communicating and letting people in the organization know what's happening. I can't tell you how many times, particularly in my consulting work, where I talk to people that have absolutely no idea what the company's actually doing or what's going on, and they feel like they're just this small part of the cog, and they don't feel important, and they don't feel like what they do matters. And if you realize when you're the CEO that every person really matters, and that just, you know, if you can improve everybody, you know, 1,000 things, 1%, if you can improve everybody by 1%, it's a massive improvement. And it really has to do with respect. So humility and respect, I would say, are the two attributes of an engaged leader that really have an impact.
And how do you get people in a workplace where there hasn't been a culture of cooperation, collaboration, or involvement? How do you get people from the bottom up to begin to feel comfortable sharing their ideas?
You answer the question, I guess, in two different ways. If you're coming in new to the organization, you have a really great opportunity to change culture. The issue becomes when you've been managing in a certain way and now you want to change management styles, and do people trust and do people believe you? And I would answer the question this way. It's going to take time. It's going to take patience, but you have to start. And what I would do, and my recommendation would be, to start by listening to the people on the front, the front lines of the organization, more than I'm focusing on the people in the middle and the senior levels. Because if the people in the middle and the senior levels see how much time and attention you're taking to listening to the people on the front, they're going to watch and observe, and they're going to emulate what you're doing, and then move backwards to the organization so that people see by example how you're listening and collaborating, and expect it to take time, Make sure the organization highlights wins when ideas come from people on the front line, to share that, celebrate that within the within the organization. Certainly, in my experience, finding books and business that people can share and read at a management level to discuss these kind of issues are really good. I'll highlight two that I think are really fantastic. The Five Dysfunctions of a Team is a great way to have a conversation around trust with the senior management team. And another book called The Energy Bus. The first book was by Patrick Leone. The Energy Bus is by John Gordon. The Energy Bus is about the importance of positiveness in organizations. And I've come into organizations where negativity just surrounds the organization and engulfs people, and it just brings down the effectiveness. So sometimes bringing in books and bringing in conversation can also be very helpful. And I certainly hope that my book can also be used, and I know people that have in a similar vein.
Well, this is Donna Anselmo on AM 1060 WMEL Bold Talk Business Radio. We've been talking with Evan Hackel about his ideas on engaged leadership, and you can get a copy of his book, Engaged Leadership, online. So, Evan, we have just about a minute left. Let people know how they can reach you, your company, and get a copy of your book.
Sure. My company is Engage Consulting. Engage spelled with an I for involvement. If you go to Amazon and you search books for engaging leadership, spelled with an I, it will come up. My email is ehackel, H-A-C-K-E-L, at engage, I-N-G-H-E-E.com. Thanks very much, Donna.
Okay, well, we are going to be talking about your book, and I'd like to make a recommendation that people read it. We'll talk about it again on another segment. And it's been a pleasure speaking with Evan Hackel on engaged leadership. Think about how you're going to get people to help you and your company, and how you're going to get your company on a track like this, even if you're an employee there, because your opinion does count. Bring a copy of Evan's book in and let your CEO take a look at it. That would be Engaging Leadership, and you can find it at Amazon.com. Thank you so much, Evan Hackel, for being with us today on Bold Talk Business Radio. Come back next week. We've got another show on leadership planned for you next Tuesday at 1:00.